Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAction with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy or life-saving vaccine? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Take your hospitality tech brand international? Montgomery County, Maryland is where you can do all that and more. Use our ideal location next to DC, diverse world-class talent, and our vast business resources to be the next company to make your mark and transform the world. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com. That's bnext.thinkmoco.com to learn how we can help you create something remarkable.
Welcome to the Fandrax Toolshed. If you love Dynasty Leagues and prospects, you came to the right place because that's what this show is all about. Covering the majors and all levels of the minor leagues to give you the leg up in your Dynasty Leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
All right, Dynasty and Prospect Fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 42 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. This is going to be part two of our trade deadline recap because there were so many damn trades. We had to split it into two episodes. If you missed part one where we discussed all of the major league players traded and all the value changes and whatnot that went along with that with David Mendelsohn, go back and check out episode 41 that dropped on Saturday afternoon. We will be discussing all of the prospects dealt in this episode, and there was a ton of them. And with me, as always, from Fantrax HQ, Mr. Chris Clegg. What's up, bud?
Feels like we just did this, but we're back at it again. It's going to be fun. You know, prospects are obviously our thing. So we chatted about all the major league guys on the move. Now we get some minor leaguers. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Awesome time.
Right. There were plenty of them, as we were just saying before we came on the air. There's like, you know, obviously all rankings are different, but right around like five or six top 100 guys, you know, another handful more top 150 to 200 guys. So a lot of intriguing names were dealt at this year's trade deadline, which was probably the craziest deadline I can remember. It was one a few years back, 2017, 18, something like that. That was pretty hectic, but I think this one topped it for sure. This is so many deals, and it was a great day to take off from work, and I forgot to take the day off from work. So next year I will make sure to do that. But before we get into the episode here, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Please check out our Patreon for extra written content from both of us, bonus podcasts, private Discord access, access to our live prospect and dynasty rankings, and much more. These perks are available across four different tiers, starting at $5 a month. Or if you just want to thank and support Chris and I, you can do so for $1 a month. Sign up today at patreon.com/FantraxToolshed. And of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the network, including our other podcast, SP Streamer, On Campus, and Fantasy Hockey Life. All right, Chris, let's get into the episode here. Let's start with a big one here. Let's get things rolling with a big one. In arguably probably the biggest prospect haul that went one way or the other this trade deadline, the Minnesota Twins dealt Jose Berríos to the Toronto Blue Jays. And initially, we saw that Simeon Woods Richardson was going back in the deal. Like, all right, good first piece back for Berríos. Probably going to have some other, you know, mid-level prospects added in. But then, nope, Austin Martin is the other person back in this. So Martin's a top, you know, some are higher, some are lower on Martin. Top 30 to 40 guy for most people, though. And SWR is definitely top 100 right now. Both of them go back to Minnesota here. Let's start with SWR. You know, I saw him earlier in the season, and he looked pretty good. You know, solid above average fastball. I don't know if I'd say plus on his fastball, but above average. Was showing a really, really good curveball. He was landing for strikes. You know, I've seen varying grades from other analysts and scouts on his curveball. I personally have it as plus. And he also mixes in a above average changeup and a solid slider as well. Command and control, you know, this year has been kind of wonky, though. It's been up and down. You know, the walk rate is currently over 10%. Though the strikeout rate is over 30%, so he's still missing a lot of bats. But overall, 5.76 ERA, 1.50 WHIP. Like I said, the higher walker rate. So been a kind of an inconsistent year for Woods Richardson. But Chris, what are your thoughts on him this season, and where do you have him in your rankings right now?
Yeah, I still believe in him. It's been kind of an up and down year. Like, he started the year really strong. I think you saw him towards the beginning when he was performing really well.
I think it was his second or third start of the year. It was like late April. Yes, it was. Oh no, excuse me. It was mid to late May. So it was like one of his first starts of the year.
Right, and so he's still young for, I mean, the level. Honestly, he's not even 21 years old yet. I had him earlier in the year at 56. I dropped him to 78 this update, just obviously adding in, you know, the new first year players and dropping him a little bit because performance. I still think there's plenty of upside to be had here. I like the profile. Obviously, the command control is something that's going to need to tick up some. But like you mentioned, he's got a good fastball, get some good cut action to it, good curve. I mean, the changeup's, I think, a plus pitch. So I think that a lot of it kind of hinges on his command control. And I think that's what it's going to come down to here. And hopefully the Twins can develop that. And I like the get here. I mean, they gave up a year and a half of Berríos, and, you know, we'll get 6 years of control for both these guys, which is huge for them. So yeah, I'm still in on SWR, dropped a little bit, but I think he's still easily a top 100 guy for me.
Yep. Totally agree. He's currently 84th for me. A couple other arms in this range here. So Chris, let's do a little bit of, you know, who you got, SWR or Asa Lacy.
SWR
or Reed Detmers?
Detmers.
SWR or Edward Cabrera?
It's a toss up. That's pretty close. That's a good comparison. Probably slightly into Cabrera, but I think it's pretty close.
Yeah, agreed. Let's throw a couple of the new guys in. Him or Kumar Rocker?
I'll take Rocker.
Okay. Yeah, that's basically, I think I have, I think the only one we differed on, I still have Asa Lacy. I have three spots ahead of SWR, but definitely in that range. Like the one I have below SWR, which I think we'd both take SWR over this guy, Matt Manning. Well, I assume you're still higher on SWR.
Yeah, Manning's outside of my top 100 now.
Yeah. And and speaking of Reed Detmers, making his he made his debut. Well, okay, we're recording this on Saturday, so he's making it tomorrow and Sunday. But when you're listening to this on Monday, it would be yesterday. Kind of weird, but yeah, he's very intriguing. But we'll talk about him on our next episode coming out on Wednesday. So check in on that for him. But yeah, SWR. Yeah, so I've moved him down a little bit, but still think he's definitely top 100 guy. I agree with you there. And he's just a likable guy. Like I said, I met his father at his start earlier this year. Father was a great guy, just talking baseball and how proud he was of Semien. So definitely a guy I'm rooting for to do well. It seems like a good family. So I think he can definitely still be I don't know if I'd say he has SP2 upside, probably more like high-end SP3. I think that's fair to say, especially if the command and control does tick up. Because right now, I think they're both fringe average. You know, maybe put him at 45. I think he's a little bit more command over control right now. Like he wasn't really missing the spots too much, but just couldn't hit the strike zone consistently. So I'd say maybe like fringe 50 command, 45 control at the moment. So definitely something he needs to work on. But the bigger piece going over to Minnesota from Toronto, Austin Martin, but he's kind of like, you know, another, like the hitting version of SWR, where, you know, talented guy, but hasn't really impressed like this year. I've seen Martin four times this year, something like that. A handful of times, we'll say, live, because, you know, Portland and New Hampshire play each other a ton this year. And I've been, you know, underwhelmed. But he's hitting for average. He's hitting .281 right now, getting on base, .424 OBP, but just not impacting the ball much at all. Two home runs, only 14 extra base hits in the 55 games. Does have 9 steals. So right now it's really a, you know, approach profile, a high contact profile, which is what we thought when he came out of Vanderbilt, was one of the most advanced bats in the class. And, you know, some people, I've seen some people on Twitter be like, oh, well, it was an aggressive assignment. And yeah, I guess you could say AA, the start is a slightly aggressive for Toronto. But at the same time, he was, again, one of the more advanced bats coming out of that pretty good 2020 draft class. And also played in the loaded SEC, which is the, you know, best conference in the nation for collegiate baseball purposes. So it's not like, yeah, maybe they could have started him at high A, but he probably would have been a double A pretty quickly. Again, he's performed okay. He said the walk rate is very good right now. Walk rate currently sits at 14.8%. K rate is a tick over 20% at 21.2. So still showing that great approach that he showed at Vanderbilt, but I don't know, Chris, if he doesn't start hitting for more power and impacting the ball, is he just going to be like, I'm trying to think of a good comp here. I know a slightly different profile, but like, I mean, like on Jeff McNeil's level of value, kind of like a, you know, at best a back end top 100 guy. Do you see star power here, or are you kind of down on him because of the lack of power right now?
Yeah. And I've dropped him a little bit. Like I was probably too high on him coming out of Vanderbilt because he was very impressive.
Yes,
at Vanderbilt, and he mentioned the best competition he could play, and the power looked better in college. Obviously, you know, transitioning from a metal bat to a wood bat has an effect, and that could be affecting him right now. But I think it is important to say, like, somebody on Twitter said that he was overrated, and then everybody started saying he was overrated yesterday. make your own opinions, guys. Like, just because one prospect analyst says something doesn't mean you should say it too,
right?
Like, everybody jumped off the Austin Martin train yesterday and his perceived value tanked. Like, I think it's, and what Chris Blessing said was fair. Like his analysis was good on it, but just because he said it doesn't mean everybody else needs to say, oh, he's overrated. I saw it so many times yesterday.
Yeah.
That's all Twitter was saying. Austin Martin's overrated. Like one person, it took one person saying it. Like we've got to stop that groupthink as a fantasy community. Honestly, it was just kind of frustrating to see everybody say like he's terrible now. Like I don't think he's terrible. You know, maybe he was a little overrated coming out of Vanderbilt, and that's okay. Guys take time to transition as well. So, you know, the game power may not be what we thought it might be. Maybe he's a little below average game power, but I still think the hit tool's plus. I think, you know, he's going to steal some bases. He's got average like sprint speed, but I think he's still got a knack to steal bases. So, you know, I mean, maybe he's a 15-15 caliber player that can hit 280, which I still think has some value. It can play. You know, it's not worthy of being like a high-end prospect. So like from that standpoint, you know, I did drop him. I probably deserve to drop him a little more, but you know, I'm not going to come out and say like he's completely overrated and he's a terrible ball player. Like that's extreme. And I think that people took what Blessing said to the extreme when I don't think he was saying he was a terrible ball player by any means.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Yeah, that's all it takes, one person to say something. And especially when it's a highly regarded analyst as Chris Blessing is, you know, someone that's been, you know, in the game and analyzing prospects for a long time now, someone I respect a ton that I've learned from over the years. So when someone like that says something, and I think it definitely got taken out of context, like you mentioned, Chris wasn't saying that it was, you know, he's a bad prospect, because he's definitely not. I don't think anybody would say that, but I definitely think that we did overrate, a lot of us overrated Martin a little bit due to, you know, what he was at Vanderbilt and, you know, the tools that we saw from him. But yeah, I think that's why I brought up Jeff McNeil, even though McNeil is a little more power than speed. I think it'll be a flip flop for Austin Martin. But a guy that says, you know, high average, high OBP, probably, you know, has a pretty good amount of run score total, because he's probably going to be a guy that hits high in the lineup there. But I do like the move here to Minnesota. Minnesota has a good track record developing bats, and especially recently with, you know, Alex Kirilloff and Trevor Larnach coming up this year. So I got plenty more good bats in the minor league. So, you know, if someone is taking what Chris Blessing said to the extreme and wanting to sell and just get rid of Austin Martin and sell pretty low on him, I might swoop in and see if I can get him for a reasonable price tag here, because he's still a top 40 prospect for me. As I pull up my rankings right now, he's currently, he's around 30 right now for me, kind of in the same range as Brandon Marsh, Josh Lowe, guys like that. So I still think there's plenty of upside here, higher floor than a, you know, high ceiling. But definitely still like Austin Martin a decent amount. This, hopefully the power can get to the point where he can at least be like, I don't know, what do you think, 15 home runs or so, 12 to 15. I think that's still fairly realistic, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe he's not a 20 to 25 guy, but, you know, 280 plus, you know, 375 plus OBP, 12, 15 home runs, you know, maybe 18 to 20 steals. Doesn't look like extravagant, but that'll get it done. Especially, you know, I don't know where he is. I still don't know where he ends up defensively. You know, we're starting to figure out how Toronto valued him. He was splitting time at center field and shortstop. We'll see how Minnesota values him defensively. So he could end up at any number of positions, and maybe he's a guy that gets multi-position eligibility like Jeff McNeil has over the years. So definitely a guy that could still provide some solid value for purposes. But moving on here to the next deal, much smaller deal, but Abraham Toro and Joe Smith went to Seattle in the deal for Kendall Graveman and Rafael Montero. I know Toro is not technically still a prospect, but he kind of feels like one. And Joe Smith's a guy that we talked about a little bit before it was the show with Michael Richards like a month or two ago. He's having a pretty solid year. What do you think of Toro and Smith going to Seattle here, Chris?
I like it for Toro. I've always been a fan. I mean, he makes good contact, and I think he's going to get more playing time here. You know, I don't see them re-signing Kyle Seager, so you could think that Toro's going to get his reps this year, and then he could be the incumbent at third base next season. And, you know, he's already been impressive at what he's done so far with Seattle. You know, you saw him come in. I mean, literally just switch dugouts after they traded him. He comes in to pinch hit the ninth and hits a bomb off Brian Presley, which was pretty awesome.
That was great.
Yeah, I mean, a player like Toro is intriguing. Like, you know, he's not going to cost you much. He may be available on the wire, and I think that he can provide some value for you, you know, right now, like immediate help. And so I'm buying, like, he was definitely blocked in Houston. So now that he gets a chance to be free in Seattle, I'm all in on that. I like that move a lot for him personally, and for fantasy purposes, I like that too.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been like the biggest Toro guy. And I think my rankings over the years kind of reflected that. But, you know, as I mentioned here, as he was actually in my Wire article earlier today, well, on Saturday, when you're listening to this on Monday, I had Toro in there, and I said he's a solid bat. Like, nothing about him stands out. Like, I even mentioned, he's not a star in the making, but he's shown some offensive adequacy that maybe he can be at least an average bat at third base, like hit you a decent average or some pop, maybe 270, 18 to 20 homer type, something like that. He's shown a good approach as well. Never was a huge strikeout guy. Always had a decent walk rate as well. And this year, his first couple of games, he was starting at second base in Seattle too. So maybe multi-position eligibility guy. Who knows? We'll see how that works out moving forward here. But I do agree that, you know, I think he's the third baseman of the future, especially with they just traded away, which we'll get to in a second here, Austin Shenton, who is a solid prospect in his own right. So it's kind of like, looks like it's Toro's spot to lose over there at the hot corner long-term after Seager leaves. It's definitely a solid kind of sneaky target in dynasty leagues, because I don't think there's a lot of hype, a lot of, you know, high price tags out there on Toro. So you can probably swoop in and get them for a pretty realistic or pretty reasonable, I should say, price tag. So definitely want to target there. And moving on to Austin Shenton here, he went in a subsequent trade from Seattle, went down to Tampa Bay along with JT Chargois. Chris, have we figured out how to say that last name?
No, I don't think I have.
If you would have guessed, what'd you say? What would you say it is? Chargois? No,
Chargo. I don't know. Maybe Chargo, the highest is
Chargo. Yeah, I know. I always funny story. So this reminded me. I when I was younger, talking like age 20, 21, it's about a decade ago, I worked at a warehouse. Actually, the same company I'm still at, but I'm in a different role now. And I worked in the receiving department, so we were receiving in all these shipments of it's a bedding company, so sheets, pillows, etc. And we were receiving in this order of sheets from a Italian vendor we had, and on the box it said like all the information, size, the color, all that. And I was looking at my buddy, who was a French Canadian guy, and I was like, Craig, what's this color? Chamois. He's like, dude, that's chamois. I'm like, oh, I'd never seen chamois spelled out before, but same ending, the O-I-S. So I'm thinking it's coming in here where it's something like that. But
so I looked it up. It's Chagua. S-H-A-G-W-A-H. That's Chagua, right?
Way off. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Apologies, JT, if you're listening. Totally butchered the last name, but I will get it right going forward. So Chagua.
Chagua.
Chagua. Okay. Chagua. JT Chagua. That was the mystery is solved. We know how to say his last name now. So getting back to business. Yeah. Austin Shenton and JT Chagua went to Tampa Bay in the Diego Castillo deal. And that's an interesting deal. You know, I don't know how Shenton works into Tampa Bay's long-term plans. Is, you know, they pretty much have a lot of depth everywhere. You know, they have Kevin Padlo as well, that's played some third base, and who knows if any of their top guys end up there long-term, you know, Wander or whoever. But, you know, Shenton himself is a pretty solid prospect. Again, kind of like Toro in a way where he doesn't do anything like well. He doesn't have this huge standout tool, but he's just a solid hitting prospect that can hit you a little bit solid average, some a little bit of pop, not a big power guy. But this year, he's been performing very well across two levels so far, high A and double A here. 326 total plate appearances. He's slashing 298, 411, 559 with 29 doubles and 12 home runs in those 69 games. Walk rate currently is at 13.8% and strikeout rate at respectable 22.1%. So again, doesn't provide speed, but I think you could say he's average to above average hit, average to above average power, and very underrated in general. What are your thoughts on Shenton here, Chris?
Yeah, I'm a fan. I think the hit tool's improved and he's shown that this year. And I think there's some probably above average power in the profile and he's performed. I don't really like him going to Tampa Bay just because we know what they do and they have a lot of talent. So how does he fit, I guess, is the ultimate question. But like you said, he's been really good and he makes good contact. He makes a lot of hard contact, actually. Good plate discipline, over 400 OBP, over 326 plate appearances. That's really impressive. And OPS near 1,000 at 990. So, I like the profile all around. Seems that he's probably been a little underrated in prospect circles. And hopefully he gets a shot with Tampa Bay. But, I don't really love the landing spot.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. But I will say, at least, if there's any one kind of area on the field where Tampa Bay doesn't have, super deep depth there or elite depth, it's probably at the corners, right? Like up the middle, they got a lot pitching. They got a lot outfield, but first and third, they don't have a ton of top guys. So I guess that's and he's played some first base as well. I think he started, 12 games at first base this year. Had 15 games last year at first base. Well, so primarily third baseman, but has played some first, a little bit of second too. Three games started the second this year, and he had someone in college as well and in the low minors. So he's played a little bit of outfield too. So he's a guy that they could move around to. So maybe he's not primarily a third base moving forward. We'll see. But overall, he's a guy I definitely do like a good amount here. Where do you have him valued for in terms of prospects? Do you think he can be, and right now I have him at 242, but at the same time, he's moving up, this year. Like he's already moved up over 100 spots for me this year. Do you think end of the year top 150 is, reasonable, or do you think that's a little too high?
No, I think if he keeps showing this improved hit tool and the good plate discipline and the power, then no, I think 150 is definitely attainable.
All right, agreed. I think that's definitely possible. Another trade, it's kind of keeping this Tampa Bay theme moving here. They made a smaller deal, but they acquired Jordan Luplow from the Cleveland Indians, along with DJ Johnson for Peyton Battenfield, who is an arm that's kind of burst onto the scene this year. He wasn't really ranked highly at really anywhere coming into the year, but really, really dominated this year. He's a 6'4 right-hander, 225 pounds, nearly 24 years old, though. He'll be 24 in about a week's time. Was primarily a reliever and was basically a reliever only in college at Oklahoma State when he made one start there, and was mostly a reliever in 2019, 9 relief appearances, 5 starts in low A for Houston. But since he's come over to Tampa Bay, they moved him into the rotation, and that looks like a good move. In 14 games this year, 12 of which have been starts, for 67 and a third innings, 2.14 ERA, 0.80 WHIP, and a great, he's 12 walks and 95 strikeouts so far, with 258 batters faced. So that's that walk rate, 4.7%, and the strikeout rate at 36.8%. So very good stats this year. And he's really been, like I said, a guy that's popped up a lot. So what are your thoughts on him, and how high do you think he can go rest of the year in prospect rankings?
Yeah, he's one that I've been a fan of every time I've watched. And, I think it's the right move to make him a starter. And I like that. Obviously, I like what he's done. It's just weird that they traded him. Right? That was just a bizarre trade to me. And I'm pretty aggressive on Battenfield. I put him at 121 in the recent update. And wow. I actually like him better now that he's with Cleveland, because we know the track record of developing pitchers.
Yeah, I do. I do too. 121, though, that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah, it might be more aggressive than anybody, but you know, I've really liked what I've seen. He's pretty well rounded. The command is really good. The strikeouts have been there. You know, he's just been so stinking impressive. It's hard to ignore what he's done. And you know, maybe it was one of those things where he was just destined to be a starter. And he's never got the shot, and he's performed. So, yeah, I'm pretty aggressive ranking. So I think he could be a top 100 guy by the end of the year. So to me, it was a really bizarre move for Tampa Bay to do this for Jordan Luplow and DJ Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Cause you know, I'm a fan of Battenfield, and you know, he just seems like he will be a monster in Cleveland. Like they could just do their magic and he'll be a stud. So I'm very excited to see his development, how it goes in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm not obviously not quite as high as you. I have him around 247. Yeah, I was pretty close right now. But he's definitely he's one that wasn't even on my really wasn't even on my radar coming in. Like I knew of Peyton Battenfield, but you know, but yeah, definitely how he's looked this year has been great. Like every start, he's doing something well. He was popping up in like you know my daily prospect recap, you know, tweets every morning, like every you know fifth, sixth day. So I'm like, oh, there's Peyton Battenfield again, with another good outing. And you know, he's not a guy that, like, even though he's risen a, you know, a good amount this year and performing very well, and I don't know how he projects long-term. Definitely, like you mentioned, getting in Cleveland is great. These are the types of guys that they love to get, the good command and control profiles they can really work with. You know, I just don't know if there's any plus offerings there. It's a lot of, like, 50s, 55s, but that'll still play, though. I think long-term, he kind of screams number four starter for me, like a higher floor number four. But then again, he misses bats. Like I said, he's at that around 35% K rate. So definitely a guy on the rise here that you could probably still get for a reasonable price in Dynasty League. Because even though he's been performing pretty well, like Peyton Battenfield isn't like a big prospect name right now. No. So definitely one I think you could still get for a reasonable cost. So, at least right now, but he keeps this up. You won't be able to get him for a reasonable cost much longer. So nope. Definitely go out, try it now as opposed to like in the off season. So definitely an interesting name there. Any arm going to Cleveland is interesting for sure. And now moving on to a much more risky arm, not a high floor arm, but one with high upside. Anderson Espinosa got dealt from the San Diego Padres back to the Chicago Cubs in the Jake Marisnyk deal. Chris, you know, Espinosa, he's been around for a while. Obviously, he's been around for, I think the Red Sox signed him way back in, I want to say it was 2014, I'm pretty sure. Obviously, he had that four-year stretch where he wasn't pitching at all because of all the injuries he had. But he's finally back on the mound. You know, that's, you know, part one of the battle. He's still only 23. Like, you'd think he was a lot older, but since he got signed at 16 years old, you know, obviously he's still fairly young. This year in high A Fort Wayne, 5.02 ERA, 1.47 whip. Walk rate is, you know, hair over 10%, but he is striking out batters at a near 30% clip here. So do you think there's still any value to Espinosa in Dynasty Leagues, or is he one you're just because of all the risk involved, you're just staying away at this point?
I mean, in a deeper league, I think he's worth a shot. Yeah, like he hasn't been super impressive this year. But again, we have to remember that he hasn't pitched in a game since 2016. So
right.
You know, that's a big layoff. And I think there's some comfortability factors that play into that as well. So, you know, I'm willing to give him his fair shake. And also you look, and while he started 12 games, he's pitched just 28 innings. So at the same time, like he just doesn't have the workload yet. I don't know. I mean, I actually like the move for the Cubs. Like it was a move that could pay off, and Jake Marisnyk had no value to them. And, you know, at least with Espinosa, it's a chance that you get something where, you know, he could be a back end starter. But at one point, you know, he was highly valued. You know, he was one of like the top prospects in the Red Sox system way back in the day. Right. It's been quite a while now, but you know, I don't know. I'm willing to take a shot in a deeper dynasty league, but you know, he's not like spectacular, but there is the chance that, you know, he comes around and he continues to develop and he proves his worth. I think there's definitely that chance.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like you mentioned, you know, Mariznick is not a guy that fits into your long-term plan. He's always been like that fourth outfielder. He's got some pop, plays solid defense, but never anybody that's got to be a cornerstone piece. So getting rid of him, whatever. And Espinosa, he's intriguing. Like you mentioned, he's got the good stuff. He's got the, you know, good fastball, velocity, curveball, changeup. But I want to see next year. I think will be the make or break year for him. This year is kind of like, all right, get back, shake the rust off, you know, get the feel back for being on the mound after that long layoff. But then next year, like, all right, this is the year. Are you going to get back to being a good pitching prospect here with some long term upside, or has that ship sailed? So I'm kind of just giving him a pass this year, seeing it's good to have him back on the mound, but 2022, I think, will be the make or break year for Espinosa. His age 24 year, probably in Double-A. That'll be the real telltale sign to me as to, is he going to be something or is he not going to be anything at all moving forward. But let's go ahead and take a quick break here. This was a good segue. We started off with the minor Cub deal here. We got a few more Chicago Cubs trades to talk about on the other side with a lot of intriguing prospects going back to the Cubs. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back from the break, talking all the prospects that were traded at the trade deadline this year, and there were a ton of them. Let's get right back into it here with the other Chicago Cubs trades they made with Bryant, Baez, Rizzo leaving town, along with Kimbrel, but he didn't net a prospect, even though Nick Madrigal was a really good get for Kimbrel there. We talked about that in part one with David Mendelsohn, so go check that out.
Tax day is coming.
Oh, no.
But if you sign up for Robinhood Gold's IRA with a 3% match, you can get up to $195 for the 2023 tax year.
Oh, yeah.
Sign up at Robinhood.com/boost by tax day to get the biggest contribution match on the market. Subscription fees apply. You know you got the
most. Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC.
Let's start with the Bryant deal. That netted them Alexander Canario and Caleb Killian from the San Francisco Giants. And that was, I feel like Cubs fans were in general a little underwhelmed with the return. But at the same time, you weren't going to get elite prospects back for a Chris Bryant in this, especially with his, you know, contract coming to an end here pretty soon. But the two they did get were pretty intriguing. Like, we'll start with Killian here. He's really kind of burst, another one that's kind of bursted onto the scene this year that wasn't really on anybody's radar coming into 2021. In 15 starts between High A, Eugene, and Double A Richmond, 2.13 ERA, 0.82 WHIP, and a great strikeout to walk ratio, 10 times, more than 10 times, almost 11 times as many strikeouts as walks, 96 walks to only 96 strikeouts to only 9 walks in 84 and 2/3 innings. So, you know, the bump up to Double-A hasn't seemed to face him at all. 2.43 ERA there. You know, this is a guy where I still don't think he's more than a number 4, number 5 starter long term, but he's really impressed here, especially with that command and control profile. So the Cubs getting him back in this, I think, was a very sneaky addition. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, and I think that people will just be quick to look at prospect rankings and see him not very high, and that will be the judgment. But, you know, right. Killian's one that I think in the long term could make the jump and be a really solid prospect for them. And you mentioned the stats. They've looked good, and, you know, he also excels at just keeping the ball on the ground, you know, near 50% yep. ground ball rate at Double-A, which is really nice. And, you know, he limits when he allows a fly ball, he keeps it in the park more like at elite rates, which is fantastic. Those a lot of first pitch strikes, like things you want to see, and, you know, a good CSW, not like elite CSW, but, you know, pretty solid, you know, called plus swinging strike rates there. And yeah, I think he's more intriguing than people give him credit for. And I think that people will come around. I need to come around more on him in my rankings because, you know, he's continued to prove that the beginning of the year was not just a fluke. He's just turned 24 years old. And so, you know, not super old by any means, even though in AA at 24, people say, well, you know, he should be up by now or should have debuted by now. But, you know, I like what I've seen. And I think he's really taken steps forward and the command control's fantastic. The strikeout stuff is there. So yeah, I'm certainly a fan of this. And I think the Cubs did really well to get him. I know anything probably was like very underwhelming after the report was Joey Bart plus.
Right. So. Yeah. And that's fair. That's a name people know. People don't really know Caleb Killian, and you know, not as many people know, you know, Alexander Canario, at least not to Joey Bart's extent, but Canario is one where that was obviously the bigger piece that came back here. And the one that I'm really, really intrigued by, because he's a borderline. I have him like right around top 100 overall right now. I think he's already one of their five best prospects for dynasty rankings. Obviously, Brendan Davis is the number one easily. And then it's like a big cluster of like Ed Howard, Christian Hernandez, Pete Crow Armstrong, who we'll get to here in a little bit, Reginald Preciado. And then Canario is kind of like right in that mix where he's been one that has really excelled since coming back and posted some pretty, you know, good exit velocities. He has struggled a bit lately, which has really kind of suppressed the stats a bit. So he's only slashing 235, 325, 433 right now. But at the same time, he has 9 home runs, 15 steals in 65 games. Again, you know, a guy that's posted some pretty good exit velocities. I think he's at above average to plus raw power, above average speed. You know, you got to see that power come up more consistently in games. But he's still very young. I think he's still only 20. How old is Canario?
Turned 21.
Yeah. Oh, just turned 21. Okay. And there's still some, you know, projection on this frame too. So I think he could be a guy that gets up to, you know, around 20 home runs. Maybe he got up for 2020 down the road. We'll see. Obviously, he's still a ways away. He's still down in high A right now. But definitely, if the hit tool can get to at least a 50 to allow the power speed to come out fully, I think he's going to be a guy that you maybe could see this time next year. I won't be surprised if Canario is top 50. What are your thoughts on him, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's fair on the high end side. You know, top 100 is something that he could easily approach. Like you said, want to see him make more consistent contact. Like that's obviously a big thing with him as the hit tool. And, you know, it hasn't fully been there this year. So that's something I'd like to see. He's hitting just 235. He honestly, a lot of it's just hitting a lot of fly balls and he's not hitting the ball. You know, line drives produce the highest batting average. And so his dispersion right now is near 40% ground ball rate, 48% fly ball rate, and just 12% line drives. And so you need to see him hit more line drives. You want to see the batting average tick up a little bit. So that's kind of the hope, is that that's what happens, is that he does, you know, see that come up. And that would, it causes batting average to go up. Because there's a lot of lazy fly outs right now because I don't think the power is like, you know, overly elite. So he's not, the big fly balls just aren't leaving the park, but still, you know, 9 home runs and 15 stolen bases is definitely an intriguing profile. So yeah, I think that I'm curious as to how he'll develop. I think that, you know, he could bump to AA maybe by the end of the year, but it wouldn't surprise me also to see him just stick in high for the rest of the season. But yeah, he's definitely one that could be top 100, top 75, in my opinion.
Yep. Definitely agree. How high do you think Killian can rise? Do you think, what's a good spot? Do you think he could be top 200 by end of season?
Yeah, I would think that's fair. Maybe even, you know, inside the top 200. Right now I'm at 326, and I don't think that's high enough personally. So, you know, he should probably be top 250 right now. Definitely crack the top 200 by the end of the year if he keeps up what he's doing.
Yep, agreed. I have him, I was looking here, 286 right now. So yeah, I definitely think if he keeps this up, I think 200 is reasonable. Definitely is a solid kind of high floor profile there with Killian with that command and control. Doesn't really have any plus pitches, but a lot of 50-55 offerings. So definitely think that'll play long term. And something that kind of goes in his favor too, there's not a lot of pitching talent in the Cubs system right now. Like I posted my updated top 25 dynasty prospects from that system a few days back after the trade. And, you know, the top one in that system is, I still think it's Braylon Marquez, but he's probably he might be a reliever wrong term. So there's not like a, I think there's only five arms in my top 25 there. And two were Espinosa and Marquez, who are big question marks. So Killian has a chance to really step in, you know, maybe next mid to late next year and kind of seize an opportunity there. So definitely like Killian a lot here moving forward. A good piece to buy now while the price tag is still pretty low. And moving on to the Javier Baez return from the New York Mets, Pete Crow Armstrong, who they took in the first round in the 2020 draft, that he should have gone to the Red Sox. I'm still mad about that. But he went, I think it was 19th overall to the Mets last year. And unfortunately, you know, early on in his pro career, had an injury out for the year. So we won't see him again until probably, I think he should be ready by opening day next year, but we'll see. But still out for the year. So that was disappointing. But a very intriguing profile. I've said it before. He was like a Kelnick light, where the solid, I'd say above average, at least above average hit tool, plus speed, but the power isn't quite there. More of a line drive hitter, kind of a linear swing path, but you know, a guy that puts the ball in play, can use the entire field. So really a good base of tools to work off of here. And now getting into a Cubs system that develops bats very well. They're one of the top orgs in baseball and developing offensive talent, in my opinion. So I like the landing spot here for Pete Crow Armstrong. What are your thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I think this was probably the best deal that the Cubs made. Obviously, the most recognizable name being a top draft pick from 2020. Obviously, went 19th overall, but Pete Crow Armstrong is one of the most recognizable names in the draft. Like, from a prep standpoint, like, he was a popular name, went on all the circuits, so people knew him, people really liked him. He's just a gamer. You know, he enjoys playing the game, plays it with a lot of passion, you can tell. And, you know, he only got 32 plate appearances early in the year, but he was impressive. I mean, he slashed 417, 563 OBP, and 500 slug, stole two bags, didn't hit a home run, but did hit the ball on the ground a little much. But again, it was a small sample, so can't really buy into stats at that level. But, you know, you're looking at a guy that I think could be above average hit and power and then plus speed, plus he's an elite center fielder. So he's going to stick there in the center field. He'll be, could be the centerpiece of the Cubs in the outfield for a while. And I think the bat only continues to develop. You know, he's just 19 years old. He just turned 19 in March, actually. So he's still young. And even though he'll pretty much miss this season, I'm very excited to see the development next year. I think this was a good one for the Cubs. And obviously from, you know, a standpoint of fantasy, like, I don't know if it helps or hurts his value any, but I do like the openness to playing time, like, because this seems like the type of guy the Cubs want to like build around. So the team leader, as opposed to, you know, the Mets now under new ownership can just go buy that. You know, the Cubs are more likely to build around Pete Crow Armstrong. So I could see him being like a core piece of that team for many years to come, which definitely helps for fantasy.
Oh, totally agree. And you mentioned that he's a great defender too. Just really good all around ball player on both sides of the ball. And that could be an intriguing outfield in a few years. Have him in center field with Canario and then Brennan Davis on the corners. That's a pretty intriguing outfield for both real life and fantasy purposes. So definitely like the move a lot. So I'm a big Pete Crow Armstrong guy. And if the power develops, I think it can, at least to the point where he's like a, you know, 15 to 18 homer guy. I don't feel ever be like 20 plus, maybe I won't rule it out, but I think 15 to 20 is the range where he ends up in, with 25 steals and a solid average, kind of like, what's a good comp for him? Like early career Lorenzo Cain, maybe something like that. It's a very good, like a top guy, could be a top 100 fantasy pick down the road. It's a really good all-around profile. So definitely like Pete Crow Armstrong a lot. And the Cubs didn't stop there. They got back a haul of prospects from the New York Yankees in the Anthony Rizzo deal here. They got back, I just lost my spot here on my sheet. They got back in the Rizzo deal, Alexander Canario and Kevin Alcantara. Okay, maybe not a haul, but two intriguing prospects for Rizzo, who's, you know, we've seen the best from Rizzo, even though he's a great fit in the Bronx, and we talked about that on part one, so go check that out. But Vizcaino and Alcantara are two intriguing players here going back. More so Alcantara. He's one that, you know, he has the loud tools, hasn't really put it all together yet, you know, 2019/255, 305, 360, home run, 5 steals in 41 games. This year in the Florida Complex League, 364, 48, 520 so far. It's only in 8 games, 29 play appearances. Has a home run, has a steal, 4 walks, 7 Ks. He's one that's always really intrigued me. So he's got, you know, big power, some solid speed as well. You know, hit tool, obviously still a question mark here. But, you know, I think he's a guy that could be 50 hit in time. So still very raw, still only 18 years old too. Like, he debuted at 16, which doesn't really happen too often. Usually they hold him out to the next year. But debuted at 16, he'll be 19 here soon. Actually, no, he just turned 19, a couple weeks ago. But still, barely 19. Intriguing tools. He could be a big riser here. What are your thoughts on him, Chris? And do you think in time he's a, you know, maybe a top 100 guy if he shows well this year?
Yeah, I think that's easy to see top 100 potential. You know, he was really hyped when he signed with the Yankees, and then, you know, all that kind of faded. We didn't see a lot of him in game in 2019. We didn't get a ton. He was just okay, you know, rookie ball. And the complex level so far, you know, he's been pretty impressive. And we also have to remember, like, he was just 16 in 2019 when, you know, he was playing. So that obviously has a factor too. But, you know, you look at what he's done, just 29 plate appearances, but he's been impressive. He's a guy from a physical standpoint that can definitely add power. He's got good speed now, but I wouldn't be surprised if that ticks down a little bit if he does, you know, put on weight and strength, because he is, you know, he's 6'6", 188. So you look, there's definitely potential to add some weight and strength to that profile. The hit tool is going to be the question mark. It looks better already, but we'll see over a long-term standpoint of like what it actually looks like. I think that'll be a big thing for him rest of the season. Like, what does the hit tool look like? And that will kind of factor in. But yeah, Alcantara is definitely one that I could see making a jump into the top 100. Right now, I've got him just outside of the top 200, but there's definitely the upside and potential for him to move up a lot. So yeah, it was a good acquisition there. Also like Vizcaino, who's pretty intriguing. He's a little older for his level, but, and you know, the landing spot here, he could kind of move quick. I think Cubs don't really have a ton blocking him. And so, you know, he was just in high A, hasn't really pitched a ton this year, actually. So we'll see how it goes. He's on the 60 IL, I know. So when he comes back, I think he's one that could be kind of aggressive with, just due to age. And, you know, he's got a good fastball and changeup combo. I think the command and control was probably the biggest hindrance here, but, you know, has the strikeout upside, has those two great pitches. He may be destined for the bullpen, but even so, like, he could be a solid bullpen piece for him.
I think, yes, as I mentioned, I think he is a bullpen piece. You mentioned he's, you know, I'd say an above average fastball. I've seen some places put like 60 grades on it. I don't think it's plus, but I think it's above average fastball. Yeah, I think it's definitely a plus changeup though. But like you mentioned, the command and control profile has been inconsistent. I'd say, you know, below average, but I'd say 45 on both. And then he hasn't been able to really establish any sort of a breaking ball. He has a slider, but I don't even know if I'd put it at fringe average. I think it's 45 at best, maybe even a 40. Just has never shown a good feel for spinning a breaking ball. So I think the fact that there's the spotty command and control, lack of a legit, you know, reliable third offering, I think he is a bullpen guy long term. And, you know, I don't think he's gonna be a closer. You know, I think maybe at best he's like a seventh inning guy. I don't even know if I see him in the eighth inning and ninth inning role, but, you know, there's some upside there. So if he can improve the, you know, the command control, improve the breaking ball to at least just a serviceable third offering, I think it could have some back end starter upside here. But yeah, definitely more of, I think, a bullpen guy moving forward here. And let's move on to the other deal the Yankees made when they acquired Joey Gallo. Again, you want to hear all these MLB guys, go check out episode 41, part one of this with David Mendelsohn. We talked about all these guys. Love Gallo going here, obviously, with that left-handed power. But it was a decent return going back to Texas here. They didn't acquire any elite guys. The Yankees did well on trading from positions of depth. They have a lot of middle infielders, a lot of pitchers. They are able to trade from that without giving up any of their big-name prospects here. But going back to Texas in the Gallo deal were middle infielders Ezekiel Duran and Josh Smith. Infield/outfielder Trevor Halver, who was their 2020 draft pick, and Glenn Otto, who's really kind of popped this year in Double A. Glenn Otto, and that's Glenn with two N's, adds a second N to his name. This year, AA and AAA. You got a couple of starts here, AAA as well. 333 ERA, 102 whip, ton of strikeouts. K rate is around 34%, and the walk rate has been very good as well. Only 17 walks in 75 and two-thirds innings. Trevor Halver, who started off the year really hot, but has cooled since, but still hitting a solid 288. Huge walk rate, you know, 64 walks in 299 plate appearances, which equates out to a 21.4% walk rate. That's ridiculous. So that's a 445 OBP, 498 slug, 9 home runs in 66 games there. Josh Smith, let's get all the stats out of the way here. Josh Smith was injured, so he's only played 40 games this year, but 324, 453, 634 slash line. 9 home runs in 17 games, 9 home runs, 17 steals, excuse me, in 40 games. And last but not least, Ezekiel Duran, who's my highest ranked of this quartet, 292, 374, 534 in high A, 12 home runs and 13 steals in 302 plate appearances. So a lot of intriguing names here, Chris. Let's start with the middle infielders here, Duran and Josh Smith. How high are you on both these guys? Like I said, I'm higher on Ezekiel Duran. I think he's a top 200 guy right now. Good power speed blend, which he's always had. He had 13 home runs, 11 steals back in 2019. The hit tool was the question. You know, he still doesn't have the greatest approach, but the contact skills have looked better this year. So where are you at on these two guys?
I've got them both top 150. I really like the profile on both. Yeah, and Josh Smith is pretty underrated in my opinion. I don't think he's getting the love he deserves. Yeah, he's a little older for the level, but still, it's hard to argue what he's done. 9 home runs, 17 stolen bases, the slash of 324, 453, 634 this minor league season. Yeah, just 40 games, but still having a 1087 OPS is pretty dang impressive. And you look at the profile, he hits the ball hard, he makes good contact. So I'm a fan of what I've seen, and he was one that I've always kind of been a fan of, and this year just kind of popping off. You really like to see that. And you know, there's actually another Josh Smith with the Rangers, which is interesting. So, and now Fangraphs has to separate them by their middle initial, which is fun. So this one is now Josh H. Smith. But yeah, I'm a fan of Smith, Duran as well. Like you said, I've got them both top 150 because I like the profiles on both. I think that there's interesting power speed, and yeah, I'd probably give the hit. I don't know. Duran's hit tool's been improving. I think that was a question mark coming into the year. Yeah. And he's really improved that. The speed, he's gotten caught 7 times, which is interesting on the bags, but you know, not a big deal. I mean, I don't really count a ton of minor league stolen bases for future. And I don't know if Duran has the best speed overall, so I'm not sure how it will really translate. He obviously steals a lot, but he doesn't have the best speed overall.
Right.
Yeah. I think
he's probably a 50 runner, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that Duran has the more intriguing set of tools for sure, but I'm a fan of both guys. I think the Rangers did well here, actually.
Yeah, I think with Duran, he's above average to plus power, average speed, but he has shown that he wants to steal. So I think even with the, you know, middling, you know, speed grade in general, I think he's still going to be like a 15 to 18 steal guy long term, you know, 20 to 22 home runs. So still going to be a 2015 profile, I think, is within the realm possibility with him. If everything breaks right, obviously, you know, he's still a ways away. So a lot can happen between now and then. But if that hit tool continues to show improvements to be like a 50 hit type of guy, I think he could be a solid offensive player at the second base position. And Josh Smith, too. Like I said, I'm a little higher on Duran than Smith, but I agree that Smith has been very underrated. He was a second round pick for the Yankees back in 2019, I believe it was. Like I said, doesn't have the greatest profile, but does everything well. Doesn't have any like huge deficiency in his game. So definitely two players I'm very intrigued by and that are moving up my rankings quite a bit this year, especially. And then moving on to, you know, Trevor Halver. I don't know. I'm not quite as high on Halver. I think people went kind of bonkers with him earlier in the year when he was just tearing the cover off the ball to start the season. But Halver is more like a top 250 guy. You know, for me, doesn't bring really any speed to the table. I think he's a below average speed guy. Never showed like he wants to steal. He only had actually he had 0 steals in college, actually, and he has two this year, but it's never going to be a big part of his game. It's going to be the bat that carries him, the approach. And I said the approach is great. I mentioned the walk rate, the OBP, 445. I think he could be, at best, a poor man's Ryan McMahon. I don't know. I think there's some upside with the bat here, but I'm not quite as high on him as other people are. But what are your thoughts on Halver here? And Glenn Otto, too.
Yeah, no, I'm not a real fan of Halver. I think that what he homered in like six home runs in his first five games, and everybody went berserk. Like, this was going to be the next big breakout. But I've got him at 372 in my rankings. I don't really see it. You know, I think that we went a little high on him to begin with, and I did too, because I pumped him in like to 299. So he dropped from 299 to 372 in my latest update. Obviously, a lot of factors of, you know, a lot of first year players and some guys that jumped him. But, you know, I just don't see a huge impact there. But Otto, on the other hand, you know, he kind of reminds me of Killian to an extent, where he's a little older, like an older prospect, but
yep.
And he's been really dominant this year. And you look, and just stats in general, been really good. 3.33 ERA, over 13 games, 12 starts, 75 innings. And the strikeouts have been good, obviously really good, actually at 13.7 per nine, just two walks per nine as well. And it's all backed up by like the underlying metrics. Like his CSW for the year, 37.4%, is super elite. He gets a lot of called strikes. You know, he commands the ball well. He hits his spots. And so he's got 20% called strike rate, is really good. And a 17.4% swinging strike rate is also really good as well. He keeps the ball on the ground. He doesn't allow a lot of home runs, which is a plus as well. And so pretty well-rounded profile. And again, I think that I'd argue that the Rangers got three underrated prospects here in Smith, Duran, and Otto. And I think maybe they get aggressive with Otto. I don't think he debuts this year. He just was bumped to AAA, but I really could see him, you know, up next year at some point with Texas and starting.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that as well. He's moved up a good amount in my rankings too. I think I have him around 300 now. Halver's in that same area for me. I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, but definitely think he was overrated for sure. Let's move on to the last deal here. Let's end with a big one here. The return in the Trey Turner and Max Scherzer deal, which I think was underwhelming to some, but has some interesting pieces. Mainly Josiah Gray and Keibert Ruiz were the two big pieces to go back to Washington. So they've improved that system a little bit. Still, I think a bottom five system, maybe still the worst in baseball, because it was terrible, terrible before. But they've added Brady House in the draft, Dalen Lyle, you know, Cade Cavalli has excelled into a top five pitching prospect this year. Adding Gray, top 100 guy, Ruiz, top 100 guy now. Ruiz is let's start with him, Chris, and Keibert Ruiz, who has always shown the, you know, the hit tool and the approach, but the power was the question. You know, didn't really impact the ball as much as I would have liked to see. So I kind of bumped him down my rankings, but he made some mechanical adjustments in 2020 during the layoff, and that has really kind of blossomed his power back to where we thought it could be in the lower levels of the minors. And this year in AAA, 311, 381, 631 slash across 231 plate appearances with 18 doubles and 16 home runs, 10% walk rate, 11.7% strikeout rate. And he's always shown that great approach, never had any swing and miss issues to his game. Walk rate's always been pretty, you know, it's been a little lower, but he puts the ball in play so much with those high contact skills. But this year, the walk rate's around 10%, so that's very intriguing, and that power's back. So I bumped him back up into my top 100 recently. He'll be there in my next update on site in a couple of weeks, and I think he could be a sneaky good stash rest of the year too. Like, the only guys in the active roster right now are 37-year-old Rene Rivera, who's just a journeyman who's just playing there because they have nobody else right now. And Trace Barrera, who has been pretty solid this year in limited action, but projects more as a backup long term. So Ruiz could get a look here, Chris, moving forward. But what are your thoughts on Ruiz here, and where do you have him ranked long term in your prospect rankings?
Yeah, and he's probably one that I need to move up. And I've always been lower on him, but there's been legit changes this year that I probably haven't taken into full account. Like, he's always been a high contact guy, and you know, his contact rate this year is at the top of AAA at 85.4% for, so an overall contact rate, that's really impressive. And you see what he's done at AAA. He's torn it up, hitting 311, 12 OPS, so a OPS over 1,000 there, 16 home runs. And we had never seen that kind of power before. You know, 16 home runs coming over just 231 plate appearances. He's hitting the ball hard. Everything you like to see. And, you know, I think he's has an argument to be in the top 100. The catcher position is seemingly a lot better now, which is interesting from
it's prospect really, it's really a lot of intriguing names there.
Yeah, there are. And it wasn't that case at one point. So much better. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So yeah, I'm definitely like what I've seen from Ruiz. I think the adjustments have been huge for him. And so yeah, you have to take that into account. And I think he'll start in AAA with Washington, but he could see time by the end of the year for sure. And so he, like you said, he might be a sneaky stash.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, with these types of guys that you have this surge again, like you look at him and you look at the tangible changes that were made. Like we mentioned, there was a mechanical change with the swing, and it's showing this year. And this is not just a triple A, you know, aided stat line. Like, these were tangible changes that he made, and he's driving the ball in the air more consistently than he ever has. You know, like I said, the approach is still there and very solid. So there's a lot to like here. Moving forward, and you know, I'm still probably not as high on him as most, but I think he could be a 280 type of hitter, 15 to 20 home runs, you know, a high floor guy. So I definitely think, like, you look at he's really, really been driving the ball in the air this year. Like, it's been a drastic change. His previous career high, high for any level, no matter how big the sample size was back in rookie ball, 2016, 42.3% fly ball rate. Then ever since then, it's been mostly in the low 30s, you know, 31, 32, 33%. This year, 52.3% fly ball rate. The line drive rate is up as well to 23.3%. Ground ball rate, which was usually in the mid to upper 40s, down to 24.4%. Obviously, I don't think it's remained that way, but definitely the fact that he's shown the ability to drive the ball in the air after a swing change. So these are tangible changes that I'm believing in, and I'm back in on Keibert Ruiz. So top 100 for me. And then as for Josiah Gray, obviously he came up recently, made a couple of starts and looked pretty good with the Dodgers here. Numbers weren't great. He had three bombs in his first outing last week, but overall, 8 innings, he's given up 6 earned runs, 4 home runs, but does have 13 strikeouts. And with only 35 batters faced. So, really solid strikeout rate. I'm still not quite as high on on Gray as most are. I actually liked Bobby Miller and Ryan Pepio a little bit more than Josiah Gray, but he's got a plus fastball, you know, a good, you know, trio of secondaries, which are all like 50-55 offerings, but none of the three are plus. Maybe the slider flashes plus at times, but solid command and control profile, though, definitely helps. So I think he's a number three starter long-term. I don't see anything higher than that, though, but still a very solid arm. What are your thoughts on him, Chris?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's like a mid-rotation type arm. I think there is some strikeout upside, like that we're kind of discounting a little bit, but even still, like, there's some things in the profile that I don't know, not necessarily loving. I don't think he just has that front of line upside. And so it's an interesting like return for Washington here. And I do think there's some value. I think he could, I know he's starting in AAA, but I think he'd give you a little bit of value down the stretch. And, you know, he should be one that's in the rotation next year. He'll be 24 next season. So he should pitch most of the year next year at the major league level. So he's one, if you're looking for more of an impact sooner, then he's definitely one that I like. And, you know, I think there's a potential for him to take the next step and be like maybe a back end SP2, but it would take a lot on his end, in my opinion. And so I'm not ruling it out, but I think he's more of an SP3, but I do like the profile. I don't love it.
Yep. I'm pretty much right there with you. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. These were actually two bonus episodes that we added this week because there was no way we were going to get all of the deadline talk plus the other stuff we wanted to talk about into one show. So this is episode two this week. We'll have our quote-unquote normal show with what we are going to talk about on Wednesday. So make sure to tune back in there. Thank you to everyone again for listening this episode. We hope everyone enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. Check out all of our written work at FantraxHQ.com or over on our Patreon. And make sure to tune in again Wednesday for more Dynasty and Prospect talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship.
The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.